You just heard a snippet of the brand new single called She Wants What She Wants by multiple CCMA and Juno Award-winning country duo Doc Walker. Doc Walker is one of the most recognized Canadian country acts of the past 2+ decades. Some of their accomplishments include 21 top 10 singles, 26 top 20 singles, and 8 number 1 videos on CMT. They won 14 Canadian Country Music Association Awards and garnered over 40 CCMA nominations, and they've also won numerous MCMA awards as well. The duo has also been nominated for 7 Juno Awards for Country Album of the Year, including their win for their album Beautiful Life in 2009. The award-winning duo are back, and they are coming in hot with their latest new single called She Wants What She Wants. Here to talk about the new single is my very special guest, Chris Thorsteinsson. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me back. It's been a while, and it's nice to be busy and doing stuff again, I'll tell you that.
I bet, because I know this last year and a half has just been really tough on a lot of people, but fans are so happy to see you guys back. So it must feel so great coming off this last year and a half to finally get the new single out.
Yeah. We were fortunate enough that we were actually in the studio before March, before the pandemic hit. And it was really good because Dave and I love the organic feel of having a bass player and a drummer and a guitar player all in the studio at once to really kind of connect and you know, record together. That's always been a big thing with us. And, you know, it would have been pretty tough to do it, obviously, during COVID. So most of the song was recorded sort of pre-COVID. And then Dave and I just got to do a lot of work on it. And Dave actually produced this single and obviously had a lot of time. He had a year and a half, but he's a phenomenal producer. And just the amount that guy sits and thinks, I'm a bit of a scatterbrain. I'm all over the place. He's the thinker of the group.
Wow.
What I'm a talker. He's a thinker.
Well, what an impact, you know, this song has had, you know, already. And fans are absolutely loving the fact that you guys are back. We miss you guys when you're not on the radio, you know, for new music.
Yeah, well, it's been, like I said, it's been a while. But, you know, after so many years of playing and singing and writing, I'm not saying that we needed a break, but it was nice to get one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, mostly with the lyrical content that we always try to write. I mean, it would be easy for us to probably write 10 songs in a week and record and release them. But we've always had really high standards for us and for the band. And lyrically, you know, when you've had songs like Driving with the Brakes On, That Train, Beautiful Life, you know, you can't really come out with a stinker because everybody's going to smell it a mile away.
So you guys don't have any stinkers. You never have any stinkers.
Well, you know, and that's just it. So it does take a lot of time to craft a song that we're happy with. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we're a little bit of perfectionists sometimes. And but, you know, you only get one chance at it. And, you know, when you have something special to say, like She Wants What She Wants, I mean, it really has to be done right. And you want to connect with people, so you want it to be coherent.
Mm-hmm. I think it really helped a lot of artists to be able to step back, because you guys are so busy when it comes to going into the studio, you're writing in between, then you're on tour doing your radio tours, and then you're playing live music all year. It's really hard to step back and be able to take that time to just recoup and be able to look at music maybe in a way that you wouldn't have been able to if we didn't have that slowdown, right?
Well, no, exactly. And, you know, when I was doing some other interviews this week and they were asking about, you know, how the landscape of music has changed throughout our career. And I mean, if you really think about it, when we started releasing music, it was before our Curve record. It was just an album that Dave and I made years ago, but it was on cassette. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you go to CDs, and then, you know, right when Rocket Girl was released, that's pretty much when Napster came out. So that kind of put a stop on all the CD sales. And then, you know, you get to downloading with iTunes, and then it turns into streaming, and then it's ever changing. That I think what we realized is, I guess it really doesn't matter on how music gets to people. It's just got to be good when it gets there is the main thing.
Yeah, that's one way of nipping it right in the bud, because the outlook, like you said, for music, live music, and learning how to engage with fans, just a whole new way to do things, considering when you guys started.
For sure, yeah. Yeah.
Makes a big difference. And being able to reach fans further, you know, than you guys, you know, ever were before is the silver lining in the whole thing.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, there's been arguments for years of if downloading was good for music or not good for music. And at the start, a lot of indie artists loved it because it could bypass the record company, and the big record companies with all the money all of a sudden weren't making the money, and the independent artists were getting songs out all over the world, which is fantastic. And I think there was some great, unbelievable music that was found like diamonds in the rough because of the internet. And, you know, even with our career right now, I mean, we pretty much have our own label, and we have a great team hired for this single. And it's just, it's like I said, it changes so much. All we can really do is put our heart and soul into music and kind of pass it out into the world and see what happens.
Well, you guys have always written, you know, songs that have been so inspiring. Picked your songs, you know, very strategically, and what you guys were going to be putting out there. What was the influence for you when you first started, you know, in getting the music bug for you right from the beginning?
Well, I think both Dave and I have really been fans of great music, you know, and growing up, I was a huge fan of old Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, Dan Seals, the really good old 80s, 90s country. And then I got into, Dave and I really got into Blue Rodeo back in the day. And I've always been huge Eagles fans. And Dave was on a Lyle Lovett and, who was it? Oh, it was a Lyle Lovett. Well, of course, he's always been a big, big Bob Seger fan. But it's just great music. And when you sit down and listen to a song that you're not quite happy with, but it might work. And then you go, would Bob Seger sing this? And you're like, no, he wouldn't. So we always sort of play that game. It's like, you know, would Lyle Lovett sing this song, or would Bob Seger, or would Katie Lang go, wow, that's a great song? And you look at each other and go, no, they probably wouldn't.
Well, you know, those are just some of the greatest, you know, song storytellers, you know, out there. Like, those are my favorites. And it's just, if I ever need to listen to anything, Eagles are number one. Bob Seger's always been one of my absolute favorites. If I'm in a car and I'm going to be a few hours, he's going to be the one I'm going to turn to. In a heartbeat.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
You know, we did on one of our records that we actually recorded in an old school that is in Westburn, was Get Out of Denver by Bob Seger.
Oh,
and,
yes.
And Wolf, you want to talk about just about passing out trying to sing a song. It was, that's the definitely the hardest song that I've ever tried to sing. I'm glad I had a couple chances in the studio. We've tried to play it live a couple times, and oh man, I thought I was going to need oxygen.
It's hard.
It's fun though, I'll tell you that.
But people don't think his songs are hard to sing though, and they are really hard to sing.
Yeah, there's really only one Bob Seger, and mostly when you're trying to sing a song on one of your records, you realize just what kind of power he has in his voice.
Mm-hmm.
And
he still does.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely.
He still does. I think I shot him 3 years ago in Toronto when he came in with the Silver Bullet Band. That's when I had to go to. And man, he still had it. Like, the songs sound so good. And it's just amazing, amazing vocalist. Now, when it comes to touring, I know it's been tough, you know, the last year and a half. But, you know, for you guys, you're such a huge touring band. And the live music has just been always something that the fans looked forward to. What has changed for you to be able to come out after a year and a half to be able to play live music again?
Well, it's actually been quite emotional, you know, and we did a show in the East Coast with Dallas Smith and a couple of his guitar players or guys we know from Winnipeg. And, you know, just backstage, you could just feel the excitement. I'm not saying that we weren't excited before, but there's a newfound excitement. And I mean, we had a lot of laughs backstage because after 20 years of playing live, you know, I remember when we first started, we were playing a show and we had catering and they had cheese and meat tray backstage. And we were like, they were giving us food.
I know.
And we were so excited to get a cheese and meat tray. But after about 20 years of cheese and meat trays, you're like, oh, if I see one more cheese and meat tray. Well, then the pandemic hit, and I remember talking to the guys backstage from Dallas's band, and we're like, isn't it so exciting to get cheese and meat again? Like, it's the simple things, you know? And then, of course, being out there and seeing the fans and how excited they are, but there is definitely a newfound excitement. Musicians are just, they're strange people in the first place. I mean, like, we're all kind of quirky and weird. So you take what we love to do away from us, and then we just get, you know, even further down the rabbit hole of being weird. So I'm glad we can actually get out on the tour bus again and get a little bit more normal.
Chris Thorsteinson.
Well, you must have had that tour bus sitting there and going, oh, man, just sitting, looking at it and having it sit there.
Oh, it was parked across the street at this school that we own that has a studio, and every day I'd walk out and it was just the sad music playing.
Oh, man, I'm telling you, that must have been so tough, you know, because you guys have been touring for such a long time. What was it like starting out, and what was the biggest change that you've seen starting out in the music industry?
Well, when we started out, it was, you know, I really wish I could, you know, everybody wants to go back in life and sort of have a do-over, but, you know, playing the bars across Canada, we hated it. Like, I mean, but we did it so much. Like, we would go out and we would spend probably 250 days on the road playing clubs. And, you know, people can't do that anymore because mm-hmm. it doesn't really happen. You don't have live bands 5 nights a week. But back in the day, we would start out in Winnipeg, head to Regina, and then Calgary, Edmonton, Grand Prairie, out to BC. And we'd come home 2 months later, take a couple weeks off, and, you know, we always wanted to write songs and get our own original songs so we didn't have to tour in bars anymore. But in hindsight, and knowing that that's not really an option for a lot of artists right now, I really think that was one of the most important times of our career was, you know, spending nights where there was four or five people in a club and trying to connect with them and get to know people and get to know how to play. So I think we were really fortunate. As much as we disliked it at times, because, I mean, you put five guys in a old brown Suburban going across Canada in January, there's a lot of that that's not fun, but, you know, it really made a huge difference on our career.
Well, I think so, too, because you guys did the grind, right? Like you're saying, you're playing so many venues, like so many clubs in 1 year. You built your fan base that, you know, are so loyal and really care about the music you guys put out there. And that's a testament to the music you guys have chosen and written, but also the connection you guys had playing those clubs and building one fan at a time. With that,
well, you know, I mean, really, when it comes down to it, there's some shows that we've played where, you know, I remember there was this one show, this lady came up with her two daughters, and her two daughters were giant fans of Doc Walker and loved Rocket Girl. And she used to come to the club in Calgary where we used to play when she was 19, 20 years old, which, oh, wow, really dates both of us. I mean, you got to remember, I was 20, 21 when I was playing those clubs. So, you know, even if at 35, I'm 45, 46 now. I mean, it's amazing how time flies and,
oh, does it ever.
And how music can just keep going through generations.
I remember seeing you guys when you first came out and shooting your show and saying they have something special. Because if I look back in all of my photos of you guys, they go back 16 years.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So it's just like when I'm looking at it, it's just like you guys have accomplished so much in your career.
And you know, that's what really, I talk to younger artists right now, and you really got to stop and smell the roses sometimes. Like, I mean, Garth Brooks always said you can always smell the roses when you're running with them in your hand, and I agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when you introduced the show and it was Legends Doc Walker, I remember starting out with whoever made those rules, and She Hasn't Always Been This Way, and Rocket Girl, and we were the up-and-coming band. And, you know, it was only about 2 years later that they said, oh, Canadian country music veterans. I'm like, whoa, veterans? What? And then it's like, Legends of country, Canadian country music, Doc Walker. I'm like, whoa, slow down here. Like,
but you guys are. But you guys are, though. And I know that everything that you guys put out, like, we always know when there's new music with you guys that you're very current and right with exactly what fans are looking for, because you guys have always had an amazing ability to be able to test the pulse of what fans need. And that's, well, the writing.
I think being current is always just writing something as good as you can. You know, like, if you look at some of the great Bob Seger Eagles songs, I think if those were re-recorded today, they'd be current because they're great.
Mm-hmm.
They're good songs. I'm not saying Doc Walker has songs as good as you know, Bob Seger, but with songs like Driving With The Brakes On That Train and Rocket Girl, when we play those songs now, they still resonate with, like I said, the mother and the daughter, because lyrically they're a little timeless, and our production has always been a little bit, it may not be great, but it's always been fairly timeless, and I think that's something we've always really tried to strive to have.
Well, that's that unique sound that you guys have. We always know it's you. You know, as soon as the song comes on, it's like, oh, thank God, you know, because we've all been waiting for so long. But, you know, that's such a huge compliment, you know, to
well,
be.
Well, the new single is a little bit different production-wise. Like I said, Dave had a lot of time on his hands, and that the intro when he came up, that's a, I think it's a clav that he used, a piano with that 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 80s thing. Because when I wrote the song, I was playing through this guitar processor, and it had this patch that was just called 80s guitar sound. I'm like, I gotta try this. And I loved it. It took me back to the songs that I loved to listen to when I was young. And so I came up with like a bit of a melody, and then came up with some ideas of lyrics. And really the song, like the idea of the song was because of my daughter. She was 9 at the time. She's 10 now. And I was trying to write a song about heartbreak, and it just dawned on me that someday my daughter's going to have a broken heart.
Mm-hmm.
And as a father, that was a weird feeling. Like there's nothing I can do about it because it's just life and the way things go, and it's going to happen. But it really makes you feel powerless that you know your daughter's going to have this broken heart, and all you can do is just try to make her feel better. But I started thinking, you know, maybe I should just try to make her the strongest person she can be, and that to respect herself and to try to make great decisions. And that started going through my head, and that's when I came up with the idea She Wants What She Wants, about a girl who's going through some pretty terrible times and just has the nerve to stand up and say that's it, that this is the day that it's changing. And then I sent the chorus to Dave, and Dave is he's a genius when it comes to putting verses together and lyrics, and he just turned it into such a great story.
Well, the story I think resonates with every female, you know, out there, and everybody goes through it, you know, it's just everybody at any age group is going to go through that experience. So it's a really great song, and teaching somebody to be strong, you know, at her early age, it's going to go an awful long way, you know, in messages to people out there. That's why the song's doing so well.
Well, I don't know how much teaching I have to do with her. She's they always called her, my aunt's name was Flossie, and she was quite a strong, crazy lady, and all my family called Presley Bossy Flossie. So she's got it in her to not stand for any crap. So I don't think I got much work to do there.
You've got such an incredible library that you've released throughout your career. One of the special songs that we've been talking about here that you released was Rocket Girl. That's coming to 20th anniversary.
It is, and you know what? I was at the old, like, I keep talking about the school. I guess I should explain it a little bit. In Westburn, it's a small town, and they closed the school in 2000. And the community club, where the RM was going to sell the school. So we ended up buying the school and turning it into a studio because it was in a small town and it was old and they didn't want much money for it. And we're like, hey, it's a cheap studio. So we got the studio in there, and it was Dave and I were talking that it's going to be 20 years in November 20th.
That's crazy.
That we released Curve. And so anyway, I was talking to Dave about trying to find the original tapes, because back in the day, we recorded this on 24-inch tape. It wasn't a hard drive or anything like that. And so anyway, I'm going through a bunch of boxes I had at the studio, and sure enough, I see this box in the corner, and it has Curve written on it. So I open it, and there's these two 24-inch reel tapes with Rocket Girl on them.
Nice.
So I think what we're going to do is we're going to get it remastered and remixed, and we're going to re-release it on the 20th.
Oh, so, nice. Oh, that'll be
for the 20th
be
anniversary.
So
because that
cool.
song really, I mean, for a band to have a song like that that connects with an audience on such a deep level, like it wasn't even just, oh, hey, that's a good song, it's catchy. It, you know, the stories we've got of people and how that song kind of brought them through different times of their life, it's truly astonishing, you know, that as an artist you've got to remember that it's a little bit of a responsibility when you're writing a song, that you know that these songs can actually help, you know, mold and change people's lives. I know music's done that for me.
Same here. And I know that this is arguably fundamental to Canadian country music. Talk about writing Rocket Girl.
Oh, well, you know, the thing is, we didn't write Rocket Girl.
Oh.
No, it was written by Jason McCoy, and I think we all know Jason. He's a
very
phenomenal. he's a phenomenal guitar player, songwriter. Well, we had the same manager at the time, Ron Kitchener, and he had called us and said, you know, Jason has a song that he doesn't want to record on his new record because it doesn't suit the rest of the record. And Dave and I were writing a whole bunch of songs at the time, so we were a little upset. We're like, oh, I guess Jason's throwaway songs are better than the songs we're writing. So anyway, this is, you know, and I tell this story on stage because it was that long ago, that it was before emails, so Ron had to get the cassette of the song and put it into a package and go to Canada Post and send it to North Battleford to the casino we were playing at. So we got this box in the mail and found a cassette player and hooked it up to the PA. And I'll never forget, Dave and I were sitting on a monitor on stage getting ready to do sound check, and we listened to that song. And we both looked at each other and thought, what is wrong with Jason? Like, why doesn't he want to... So we find a phone as fast as we can, and we call Ron and said, yep, we'll record it.
Wow.
And you know, when Dave and I talked about it later in life, he's like, yeah, like, this is what it meant to me. And I'm like, well, this is what it meant to me. And it was two totally different things. Wow. And when a song can do that, where it brings out emotions on so many different levels, they're hard to find. I personally still have no idea what the song is about. But it makes me feel a certain way.
This has been the biggest song for you guys to date. And it says something, a smash hits, and it's got 20th anniversary coming up. So we're going to play that one right now. Very special song.
She said, I got this hat in California from a man on the street whose name was Joe. Have you ever been to California? Well, you really gotta go. She said, I knew a boy down in Miami. Well, he was a welder just like you. She said, I love the ocean in Miami. I've never seen anything quite so blue. And I say, hey, where are we going today, rocket girl? Tell me what life is like past that city limit sign. Dream your dreams in my ear. Baby, just get me out of here and fly me around this world, rocket girl. She said, have you ever been to Alberta? A wheat field as far as you can see. Have you ever seen the prairies? Someday I'll take you there with me. Just say, hey, where we going today, rocket girl? Tell me what life is like past that city limit sign. Dream your dreams in my ear. Baby, just get me out of here and fly me around this world, rocket girl. I never tell her she's been busted. I know she's never been anywhere just like me. But it makes her feel like Cinderella. And I get to see the world for free.
See the world,
I just say, hey, where are we going today? Tell me what life is like past that city limit sign. Dream your dreams in my ear. Baby, just get me out of here and fly me around this world. I just say, hey, where are we going today, rocket girl? Tell me what life is like past that city limit sign. Dream your dreams in my ear. Baby, just get me out of here and fly me around this world.
Around this world.
Fly me around this world, rocket girl. Mm-hmm.
what sweet memories Rocket Girl has off the hit album Curve by Doc Walker. You had four hit singles off the album Curve, released in 2001. What did it feel like to have four singles off that album back then?
Well, that was pretty amazing. Like, when you think about your first major album with a major record label, Rocket Girl was never supposed to be a single. We had whoever made those rules, she hasn't always been this way. And then we thought, hey, let's release Rocket Girl, because Dave and I, and even Ron, we all love the song, but I think everybody at the label and the focus groups, I guess you called it, said, well, it was so different for country radio, it wasn't going to work. And we thought, well, let's try it. I'm glad we did. Like, it, I think right at that time, that's when Drops of Jupiter came out by Train. And they were a bit similar in a way. I think Rocket Girl was sort of the country version of Drops of Jupiter. So I think that helped with our single quite a bit too. But yeah, it's to have that many singles off your first album, and CMT was a huge part of any Canadian country music, that like artist, their career in the early 2000s.
Oh, for sure.
You know, they would, you could get videos out, and that was a big thing. And they were really supportive of Canadian country music. So I think we were fortunate enough to grow up in an industry at a time where, you know, there was CMT and country radio was really promoting Canadian country music, which they still are today.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it's more of a streaming digital world now. You know, the Country Music Awards were a really big deal back in the day. And like, I'm not saying they're not now, but you know, it was on TV.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, today everything is so
different,
that, you know, on demand.
Different.
Like, well, it's different. It's on demand. There's Netflix, Prime, everything. And it's just, you know, if you're on TV, it's not even really a big thing. It's like, oh, are you on Netflix? But no, we're on CBC. So
big difference.
It was a great time. It was a lot of fun. And we're really proud of everything that happened in those days.
Well, you guys followed up with your next two albums with five hit singles, so even more, when you released another one of your hit singles was Trying to Get Back to You off the shelf. Yeah, off your self-titled album, Doc Walker, in 2003. Tell us about that song.
Well, that song is another one that we didn't write when it was sent to us. That's the first album that we worked with Justin Ebank out of Nashville. We were really fortunate enough. We went down and met with him. He came to a couple of our shows in Canada, and he was the engineer that did all the stuff with Keith Urban on Golden Road.
Mm-hmm.
And worked with Dan Huff. And it was just amazing to go down to Nashville and work with a producer and an engineer that, you know, that had that credibility and get those sounds. And I remember listening to just the tracks off the Flora, Trying to Get Back to You, and how amazing it sounded. It was a big deal for us, and then we did a very high budget video for that too, which was kind of cool. We had like three different endings that the fans could pick which ending they wanted.
I remember that was so much fun. What a great song that one was. I just remember shooting you guys for the first time. It's just award after award after award, and you guys were just on fire.
That's right when we were Trying to Get Back to You is right when we were doing that Dierks Bentley Eric Church tour across
mm-hmm.
Canada. And I remember the first song we played, the video would come up on the back screen of Trying to Get Back to You. And it was, the lights were all going crazy and the video was playing. And then we would kick into the song and these three big banners, D-Star W, would come down and we were in arenas. It was surreal. My mom passed away in 2007.
Oh, wow.
Which was unfortunate because she was such a huge part of building Doc Walker, is, you know, back in the day when I was 17, 16 years old, she was our manager at the time. So she got to see that tour and got to see
Aww.
That moment, which for me was a big deal. And, you know, with Beautiful Life, a lot of people thought that I wrote that song about my mom, Betty,
mm-hmm.
because it came out in 2008. But oddly enough, that was the last song that she ever heard. I mean, Dave and I
oh,
were
wow.
in Nashville and we wrote this song, and I came back Canada and I'm sitting at the kitchen table and I showed her the song, and usually she would always have something to say, like, about the songs. It'd be like, well, you should change this, or I don't like that, you know. But I'll never forget, I played that song and she goes, that's really good. And I'm like,
wow.
And what?
There's
oh, nothing.
No,
it's good.
No,
like,
but
no buts, eh? Just good the way it is. Oh, I love it. And I'm like, what? Usually
nice.
You got something to say.
Oh, man. So those are great memories for you. Really special time when you're playing that kind of stuff. This is Trying to Get Back to You by award-winning country duo Doc Walker here on Music's Journey.
There ought to be a faster way to fill up a Malibu, I swear. Thank God today you can pay here at the pump. All one little thing to make up time to get me back out there, heading down the road like a bullet from a gun. I bet she's in that flannel robe, curled up by the fire, reading Bridget Jones for the 15th time. Every minute I'm not there is another I'll need forgiveness for, and it's still 300 miles to Caroline. Everything is in slow motion. And say I need her in my life, but I can't do a thing from where I am right now. Everything is in slow motion.
What a great song. That was Trying to Get Back to You from the self-titled album by my very special guest, Dot Walker, here on Music's Journey. You guys have always released songs, as I said before, that connect with fans. Your fan base that you guys have built up the past two decades are really amazing. Tell us what it's like to have that kind of support, especially when you're playing back in your hometown when it all started too.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. We, going back to my conversation about playing across Canada and Saskatchewan and Alberta, and it just seems like we have little small towns, hometowns wherever we go. Like Regina, we spent so many months playing. I can think if I added up all the days that we played in the pump in Regina, it'd probably be about 3 months. And then it's Ranchman's in Calgary, and then up in Grand Prairie. and you get to know so many people that when you go back to these places, they kind of embrace you as sort of their own. That, mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember I was here when you guys were playing the bars back in the 90s. And so for us, it's wonderful to play in Manitoba, but really when it comes down to it, we have just as many roots across this, mostly across the West, mm-hmm. than we do just in Manitoba. But to be able to have that support over decades is pretty unbelievable.
Oh, that, what a great success story you guys are. What advice would you give a young Chris?
Oh, I don't know. Just go to school. I don't know. I think the one thing Dave and I have always said is persistence. Like, whether you're Garth Brooks or Taylor Swift or, you know, Bob Seger even. I mean, if you listen to Bob Seger's song about going into the gas station and everybody thinking he's a girl and...
just, I forgot about that.
Oh, I know. And just worn out from the road. And it's the times that you just don't think you're ever going to survive is when you finally get through it, that you can't quit, because it takes, you know, it doesn't matter whether you play hockey or golf or you're a singer or tennis player. It's there's that book that's, I think it's 10,000 or 100,000 hours. I forget which one it is, but you pretty much have to put in the work, and you just cannot give up. And if you're not meant to do it, then you're going to do something else that you love to do. But if you really love to do it, whether you're getting paid or not, or you love it or hate it, you just do it.
Oh, well, you guys are just a testament, you know, to what it's like to be able to play for country music fans here in Canada, because we all love you. Ontario's got a huge fan base for you guys, and I'm one of them. So, you know, we just love you.
What I love about Ontario is the small town. Look, I get they're pretty big compared to my small town, but as far as farming goes, like, I grew up in a farming community, and I still live in a farming community, but, I mean, our farms are giant out here. What I love about touring around, even into Quebec and around, you know, the rural towns in Ontario, is they're just sort of smaller family farms, mm-hmm. and the rural communities are just fantastic to go and play, because they have the fairs and the rodeos. Havelock Jamboree has been one of my favorite festivals to play out there, and Ontario's just been amazing for us. Too bad it's a little just pretty far away, or I'd be there a lot more.
What is the toughest thing for you as a musician? What has been the hardest hurdle for you?
Oh, I mean, I think it's being scared that you're not needed, really. You know, musicians always have something to say. You know, I mean, it probably happened after the first record, you know, that we had four singles off of it going, okay, well, is that it? We got to make another record because we have more to say. And then you make another record and it did well. And then when Beautiful Life came out and we had that success at the Canadian Country Music Awards in Winnipeg, I thought, well, now what do we do? You know, I think as we get older, we have a little bit less of that need for people to really embrace what we're doing, because we're just kind of comfortable doing what we do. I think that's been the toughest thing for us, mm-hmm. is always not trying to top what we've done last, but to try to stay current and try to connect with people in a way that you always have. It's like, I still wish the Eagles would come out with a record every year.
Oh gosh, me too.
You know, and that the Blue Rodeo would have a new record every year and have Try on every record. Mm-hmm. So I always feel like Doc Walker should have a record every year or two with Beautiful Life or Rocket Girl on it. So it's, if anything, I think mentally that's where you kind of got to step back and go, okay, well, we're just going to do what we do. And because that's what we did when we wrote those songs. It's not like it was a planned thing that, hey, Rocket Girl is going to change our career, Beautiful Life. They were just songs that either we loved or we wrote that we recorded. So I think it's sticking to the plan is kind of the hardest part, and not getting too freaked out that, you know, mm-hmm. it's not rocket science. It's just music.
I think it's the beauty of music is when you're writing from your heart and being able to live through experiences that you're going through, because it's like snippets of your life.
Oh, for sure. And you know, and the problem I found too for a while after Beautiful Life, so I would say about, you know, 2011, 2012, I found that we were trying to write the next big thing, or okay, we have this, we should try to write this. And it became too formula, too planned out. I remember when we wrote I'm Gonna Make You Love Me, like, that was a fluke. That was written in about 20 minutes.
Really?
It's kind of a joke. And it ended up, like, that's one of the most popular songs that we play live now. So it just goes to show that, you know, I think we spent about 2 months trying to write the next Hotel California, and then 20 minutes we throw out I'm Gonna Make You Love Me, and it becomes a hit. And we're like, okay, there's no rhyme or reason to this at all.
It's just a snippet. This is what you're feeling in that moment.
I'm Gonna Make You Love Me is a pretty stalker song. Like, it kind of is.
It is. And when I think about it now, it is.
Well, it is. You know, I'm Gonna Make You Love Me. But when Dave and I started writing it, we threw the idea around. Murray came up with the idea, I'm Gonna Make You Love Me. And then Dave and I we started talking about movies, and The Notebook came to mind, where at the start of the movie, where he does like everything to win this girl's heart. Like, he's hanging on a Ferris wheel. He's a relentless. And really, the whole idea of I'm Gonna Make You Love Me is based around the character of The Notebook, that just, he wouldn't give up. That was his thing. And then it's kind of endearing that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Again, you can look at it different ways, right? So,
yeah, that takes the attention away from the stalker part of it. That's as well. Right. As long as you connect The Notebook with your song, then you're okay.
We're safe.
I'm gonna change your mind. I'm gonna make you love me. I'm gonna keep on trying until I can make you love me. There's never been anything I wanted so bad. You gotta know I'm never gonna stop till I have you, baby. It might sound crazy, but I'm gonna make you love me. There's a red rose lying on your front porch, and I left it last night by the light of the moon, 'cause I just can't sleep when I'm thinking about my arms around you. I just gotta have you. So I'm gonna change your mind. I'm gonna make you love me. I'm gonna keep on trying until I can make you love me. There's never been anything I wanted so bad. You gotta know I'm never gonna stop till I have you, baby. It might sound crazy, but I'm gonna make you love me. Under your front door, and I wrote it all down straight from my heart, like a song in my head that I can't stop singing about you. I can't live without you. So I'm gonna change your mind.
I'm gonna change your mind.
I'm gonna make you love me. I'm gonna keep on trying.
Keep on trying.
Until I can make you love me. There's never been anything I wanted so bad. You gotta know I'm never gonna stop till I have you, baby. It might sound crazy, but I'm gonna make you love me. I'm gonna change your mind. I'm gonna make you love me.
That was I'm Gonna Make You Love Me by Country Stars Doc Walker. I'm your host, Kim Sear. I'm chatting with Chris Thorsteinson, one half of the country duo of Doc Walker. So you guys were nominated 2017. You got Artist of the Year, Recording Package of the Year with Echo Road, then 2018, 19, and 21 for Manitoba Music Awards. You guys have done so incredibly well. Do you remember the first time you ever went on stage to get an award and what you were feeling?
Yeah, it was what they called a MACA back then, Manitoba Association of Country Arts. And my mom had taken me to those when I was 14, 15 years old. And I remember the first Manitoba Association of Country Music Award like it was yesterday. And then I remember walking on the stage at the CCMAs, the Canadian Country Music Awards, because I used to watch it all the time. Mm-hmm. And when people would walk up and they, you know, were trying not to fall down the stairs or fall up the stairs when they walk, and then they're speeches are planned out. I'm like, oh, man, I'm just going to be, like, having fun. I'm going to go up there. And then we won, and I was a total nerd. Like, I'm trying not to fall up the stairs, trying to remember who to thank. And, yeah, it's just everything I thought I was going to be was thrown out the window, and I just – it's a bit of a babbling idiot, you know, but you can see why that happens for sure.
Oh, wow.
We were on the Junos one year where we had to present an award.
Oh, I remember.
When Dave messed up because we were doing it with, what's her name, Sheila Kopp?
Yep.
And she went and changed because we did the rehearsal and it was all on the teleprompter and we did fine. Well, after that, she decides that she's going to change some lines and didn't tell us. So we go up on the show, and David met, like, Dave's a genius. Like, his IQ is to the roof. So it's not like he can't read. But so he'd memorized everything. So when she was done where she was supposed to be done, Dave started saying his line.
Yeah.
And she looked at him, and he looked at the teleprompter, and it's going up and down. And he's like, oh, no. So he kind of freezes. And that's the year that they gave us in the Juno bags that they give you for presenting, you got a lot of cool swag. We got sunglasses, wallets, and we got a one of those little Nintendo PlayStation, or no, what were they called? Game Boy. They gave us a Nintendo Game Boy. So anyway, Dave's on stage, the Junos live, and he's like, oh man, I think they're going to take my Game Boy back. And I just saw Nickelback losing it. Like, Chad Kroeger's laughing his butt off at Dave. So it actually turned out good. You know, he just starts spanking people for some random reason. It was
good.
I was standing there burning hot. Like, I didn't know what to do. So I'm glad he took off on it.
Chris is going, I'm not saying a word. That was my line. I remember that show really well. I remember that.
Yeah.
Now, if you could spend a day in a life with any artist, past or present, who would it be and why?
Probably Waylon Jennings.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, just because, I mean, I read his autobiography, and I've read a lot of different autobiographies. His, like, for one, I'm a huge 50s music fan, you know, like I would say not quite Elvis. I mean, mm-hmm. I've been to Graceland, that's pretty amazing, and kind of changed my outlook on it, but... You know, the Chuck Berry's, the 50s music for me was when rock and roll really took over a genre.
Mm-hmm.
And then for Waylon to be the bass player for Buddy Holly.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And I'm a huge, like, I'm not a bass player, but I love the instrument and played right. Like, Carole Kaye is one of my favorite bass players from the Wrecking Crew. She plays on a lot of pretty much played on everything, the mm-hmm. Wrecking Crew. With Glenn Campbell and so, you know, him being a bass player and talking about playing bass with Buddy Holly, and then he was in the whole story of flipping the coin, who's going to get on the plane, whether it's a Big Bopper or Waylon
wow.
Jennings. And then to go on to record his, you know, some of those great songs, and then, like, the whole outlaw movement was really a bit of a joke that they had, that everybody took it too far.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, I think that time and that music, I could definitely spend a day hanging out with Waylon.
It's funny when you go back and you look at the lyrics back then, and, you know, when you look at music today and just the different genres that are mixed and crossed over now. And I think that rock and country always did, but not to the degree it has now.
Well, I think the one thing that we, you know, when we recorded that train, Justin Niebank, that producer that we were working with, he really loved it because he said it had meat in the bones.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you look at some of the great songs from the 60s and 70s, like Stand By Your Man, or even Fancy with Reba McEntire, like, a lot of those older songs had some meat in the bones. Like, they kind of almost made you cringe in a way, you think. And he goes, I like this song because, like, the one line, Homecoming Queen knocked around black and blue. It's horrible to say, but it's true.
Yeah.
And we could have done it so many different ways where we talked about keeping her sleeves rolled down or saying this. No, we just outright said it.
He woke up on a cold floor in a motel on the south side of nowhere, and he swore that this is the last time, like the last time before, just like the last time before. But the wheels keep turning around,
The engines, they never slowed down. And he knew that these tracks would lead to heartache and pain. But he still got on that train. And there's a girl down in Georgia, broken homecoming queen, knocked around black and blue, said this is the last time. This time I know that we're through. Oh, this time I swear that we're through. But the wheels keep turning around. The engine, they never slowed down. And she knew that these tracks would lead to heartache and pain. But she still got on that train. I wake up in a cold bed, playing shows every night on this long, lonely road. I'm thinking of you, and I just wanna come home. Oh, but I'm just too far from home. Turning around, the engines, they never slowed down. And I knew that these tracks would lead to heartache and pain, but I still got on that train. Yeah, I knew that these tracks would lead to heartache and pain, but I still got on that train.
That was That Train by Doc Walker.
The new single's a lot the same. It's pretty much, there's some meat in the bones there, and it might kind of disturb you to listen to some of the lyrics, but
it's important,
you can't
though.
Really hide, you can't, yeah, you can't hide from reality. A lot of people, and I'd rather just say it.
Oh, I hear you. Talk about the production for this one, and you were saying about Dave in the studio and recording this one remotely.
Well, a lot of it we did but we got the beds, like the meat and the potatoes of the song was recorded before COVID with the bass, drums, guitar, and the feel of the song, which was nice because Dave and I could just email tracks back. It was interesting how much time we got to spend on this song because of COVID. You know, we're really not on a timeline of a record label or manager saying, hey, we have to get the song out now. Everybody was in limbo, so we could take as much time as we needed.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, as artists, that's kind of a plus. You rarely get that option. You know, that's a luxury we usually don't get. So, you know, since it was inspired by this kind of 80s, 90s kind of feel, you know, Dave dove into it, and he experimented with a clav, and the production of it is quite extant, and it kind of shocked me what he was coming up with. It's you know, you've worked with a guy for 25 years, and all of a sudden he comes out with these sounds and this production, and I'm like, okay, well, I guess we found our new producer.
I love the line, life's too short to be an afterthought, and when she loves, she gives it all she's got. I really love this one. Such a great song.
Well, you know what? I'm glad you like that line. Our drummer thought it said, life's too short to be an astronaut.
Ah, no.
I'm like, life's not too short. Being an astronaut would be great. And then I listened to it. I'm like, oh, man, it does sound like astronaut.
I didn't hear that.
No, it's funny that Keith Urban was talking Zach Brown Band when they first came out. And it was one of those, she got whatever it is. And he goes, he thought he said, she got one of my kidneys.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's funny when people hear. But, no, that's one of the lines that just, I remember writing that line and just kind of not even really thinking about it. It just came out. Life's too short to be an afterthought. That sounds like a line that you probably would have thought about a lot and crafted, but it came out and I'm like, does that even make sense? And then you think about it and go, yeah, no, life is too short for you to be an afterthought for somebody else. You
it's
should be
so true.
the first thing on their mind and the last thing on their mind when they go to sleep. So it's a pretty special song for us, and anything we can do. Dave and I both have kids. We both have girls. And you just really try to come up with anything as a father to make your daughter a better person. And it's scary, though. I mean, God, we got to tour the bars for 5 years before we actually became musicians. And then all of a sudden, bang, you're a father. Like, I didn't go to school for this. I don't know what I'm doing.
There's no book on this. Wait a minute. Yeah. We are going to play the brand new single, She Wants What She Wants, by the multiple CCMA and Juno Award-winning country duo Doc Walker here on Music Journey.
One Sunday morning she'd had enough. They slept right through her packing up. One too many lies, one too many times. Shut the bedroom door and she tiptoed out. Took one last look at that broken house and put it all in the past. When she stepped on the gas and she took off flying down the interstate. He was always drunk and staying out late. At times he didn't come home for days, acting just like he did when he was a kid. Well, she gave and she gave, got nothing back. She loved and she loved till there was nothing left. Now she knows what she wants. Yeah, she knows what she wants. So she took off flying down the interstate.
Doc Walker is coming in hot with their brand new single, She Wants What She Wants, a story that we all can relate to and a reminder that life is gonna happen and we just need to be strong enough and love ourselves through it. What a fantastic song. I can guarantee that this one is gonna get a lot of airplay on the radio from coast to coast. Fans are loving the new single. What does it feel like to finally release new music to all your fans?
Oh, it's really like long overdue. Really? I mean, and the thing is, we have so many songs that we've been writing. Like, Dave has this song called Million Selling Mess that it's just, like, Dave is a weird cat. And I've loved him for years because of that. And then he writes this song, and I'm like, I heard it, and I'm like, this is unbelievable. And then we've got a song that was recorded by a big country act in the 80s, of course, that we might be redoing.
Cannot wait.
Not going to let the cat out of the bag, but.
Come on. You could tell me a little
something.
Okay,
you know what? You'll be the first.
Okay.
I always love the song. It's called, well, I guess, this is the first time I've said this because I think of things, don't want to let the cat out of the bag, but Shenandoah was one of my favorite bands growing up, and they had a song called Ghost in This House that I absolutely
love. That song.
Yeah, but everybody who's recorded that song, it's been recorded like 50 times by 50 different artists. Now, me being a big Jersey fan with Eddie and the Cruisers and Bruce Springsteen.
I love Eddie and the Cruisers.
I think we're actually going to speed it up, and I've done some demos of it, and do a very Jersey version of Ghost in This House by Shenandoah.
I think it'll be
fantastic. It's going to be totally different than every other version of the song, but the lyrics, like, you want to talk about meat in the bones and great lyrics. Mm-hmm. That's just a great song.
Definitely. Oh man, I'm so excited about that one. When do you think you're going to be doing that?
I don't know. We got to get in the studio. Like, now that we can actually get in the studio, I think we're gonna find some players that really bring out that Bruce. Like, Dave and I were just doing a show in Saskatchewan and drove on the way home in the truck. And we listened to the newer Bruce Springsteen record with the E Street Band.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, we're going, this would be amazing if we could do Ghost in This House like this.
Oh, wow.
Like, it would be fantastic. So it was an idea that we've been working on for a long time. And we're probably going to do that the next couple of weeks. I think we're going to get into the studio, but you never know. It takes a long time. So it could be a while, but it's something that's on our brains right now. We're brainstorming. And you've got the scoop on it.
Nice.
I've told a lot of people we're thinking about it, but I haven't actually
said you're going to do it.
So,
oh, yeah. You're going to have to come back when you guys do it. You're going to have to come back and talk about it. You did a very unusual release party for your brand new single. So tell us about that.
Oh, yeah. on my skid steer. Well, usually whenever we're releasing an album or a single, we're on tour or at radio interviews or doing something. And since it was COVID, you know, I've actually started a campground in some lakefront property that we bought years ago. Yeah. And it was something I just always wanted to do, really. I used to stay at a campground with my parents outside of Westburn, and I'm like, wouldn't it be cool to run a campground? Like, and so we had some beachfront property, this nice big sand beach. I'm like, oh, I just want to be like Sammy Hagar. I just want to have like a beach resort and a beach bar and go play and then come home and have drinks with people on the beach.
Nice.
So I started a beachfront campground, and you know, I'm just replanting a bunch of trees. We got 320 acres out there, and I found a bunch of little trees, and I had a skid steer that I owned for a while and a tree planter. So I was busy planting trees, and the office called me and I said, you should do a post today. I'm like, well, I'm kind of dirty right now and in the skid steer. And I'm like, well, whatever, I guess in this day and age, everybody loves to see what you're doing when you're not on stage. So, you know, you never know what kind of posts are going to come up next. So I got tractors and a whole bunch of other equipment I can do posts on.
Very cool. I saw that. I went, yep, that's Chris.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's funny. Everybody who saw that was, I don't think there was anybody who was shocked. They were like, holy, you're actually showing people what you really do.
Well, I think so many of the artists have had to do that in the past year, right? So we've been seeing that, you know, quite often. So I don't think it's a shock to anybody anymore. Right?
Well, no, but when you think about being a country artist, you know, going down to Nashville, I saw those guys walking around with, you know, ripped up jeans and wallet chains and plaid shirts, and I'm like, those guys are just dressing up like I used to.
Okay, so what are you most excited about for upcoming shows? I know you got one, I think, at the Club Regent, right?
Yeah, Club Regent
on November 5th.
That's Yeah, it's gonna be a lot of fun. We're gonna play there, and I think we might try to hit the Jets game the next day because they're playing the Islanders.
Nice.
And then we head out to Weyburn. Dave and I have been doing these small town shows where we go, and it's just Dave and I and our sound guy. And for me, those shows have kind of been a bit of a rejuvenation in music, where we get to talk about the songs we've recorded over the last 25 years and tell funny road stories and small community halls. And, you know, in the last, you know, during COVID, and even before COVID, like, I live in a town where, you know, you have to have fall suppers and socials, that we call them in Manitoba, where you get together and drink, pretty much. But you have to have those kind of community functions to pay for the ice plants and the curling rink and keep the skating rink going. And, you know, we go to these small towns, and we don't charge. We just do a split at the door. And it's a bit like a fall supper, but instead of good food, you just get Doc Walker.
Well, that's a pretty good thing to have.
It does. It helps up small communities, and it's something that Dave and I love to do. And we get to, you know, have some drinks and play some songs to some people in small towns that probably haven't had a show there in years. So it's,
you know,
a lot
those
of
are
fun.
My favorite shows, my absolute favorite shows, is the acoustic close up, right?
Oh, and they can definitely get out of hand some nights. It gets kind of crazy. You know, we had people that have been to four or five big shows that we've had. We played a lot of these small town shows, and people would come up and be like, you know, we've been to four or five your shows with Dauphin Country Fest or, you know, some of these bigger places. But to be able to sit here and hear the stories behind the songs and some road stories, I think I actually enjoy this more than the big live show. So,
well, it gives more meaning behind the lyrics that people might not have picked up themselves, right? When you guys start talking about
it. It's that, but it's a bit of a celebration of time. Like, you know, we've been doing this for 25 years. I love talking about it. I love talking about the songs and you know, the stories on the road that created certain songs, and it gives people a really good insight into who we are.
Well, we love you, and I'm so excited about the new music, and I can't wait to hear what's coming. I cannot wait. So you're gonna have to come back on for sure. I'm gonna fire off some burning questions right now, so here we go. Beer or whiskey?
Beer.
Okay. If you could do a live performance with one of your past idols, and you could play on what stage, where would it be and with who?
It would probably be Waylon Jennings at Sun Records in Memphis.
Ooh, that is a cool spot. Very cool. Okay, so favorite memory growing up?
Oh, favorite memory growing up. Hearing my mom play at a Rotary Talent Contest when she was playing guitar for two of her friends. I listened to her on the radio. It was fun.
Nice. If you could pass on advice that your father or your mother shared with you, what would it be?
Oh, my dad. Well, that's life.
That's life.
Yep, that's pretty much it. It's like when something kicks you in the butt or it surprises you, it's like, well, that's life.
He just simplified that whole thing.
Yep, he pretty much did.
Okay, so favorite country artist in Canada on the radio today and one of your favorite rock artists of all time?
Favorite Canadian country music artist on the radio today? I'd have to say, I'd probably Dean Brody, just because we have the exact same birthday. But the guy's a songwriting machine.
Like, he is. Just,
yeah.
He
so
is.
Him, and then rock artist.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an old school guy. Rock artist, I would say Loverboy.
Oh wow, nice! I remember that first concert they played. They were opening for Springsteen.
Mm-hmm.
When I went to see that. Very cool.
Nice.
Okay, so favorite acoustic song to play that you learnt on your guitar?
Dixieland Delight, Alabama.
Very cool. Yeah. Most useless talent?
Most useless talent?
Mm-hmm.
Cracking your fingers.
Oh, I was going to say fingernails. That would not be so good.
No. My daughter's getting into that. She's like cracking her fingers. I'm like, don't do that. It makes your knuckles big. My science teacher said it doesn't. I'm like, oh, God.
I'm telling you, we can't give advice when they hit a certain age. We just can't.
No.
Well, thank you so much, Chris, for spending some time catching up. Boy, did we ever need that one. It's been way too long, so I can't wait to see the brand new video.
Well, I'm hoping that the single does well, and I'm excited to get in the studio and, you know, between you and I with this Ghost in this House, I think it could be very, very interesting.
Ooh, I think so. I can't wait. That's a cool song.
It's just one that I grew up listening to, and it's unbelievable. So thank you so much for doing this.
Oh, you know what? It's a pleasure having you anytime. You know, that's just something that I always look forward to. So thank you so much.
Well, you know what? Once we get some more stuff coming out, make sure that you get a hold of us and we'll do this again, okay?
Sounds perfect. Say hi to Dave for us. And,
I will.
I want to remind fans that you can purchase and download the brand new single, She Wants What She Wants by Doc Walker, on all streaming platforms. Don't forget to share it on all of your playlists to help introduce the song to some new audiences that may listen to your list. So it's a great way for fans to hear the new music trending right now. You can also request it at your local country radio station. You can check out all of my latest interviews at musicsjourney.com and all of the interesting articles with the latest music and videos about all the artists I interview at nowandthenmagazine.com. You can listen to all the favorite interviews on the streaming platforms under Music's Journey Podcast. I have some great shows coming up for you with JoJo Mason, New Moon Junction, Colin James is going to be here, Dan Davidson, Lemon Cash, James Barker Band, Michelle Wright, Jamie Warren, Theo Thames is going to be here. Really interesting to be able to talk to him. I haven't talked to him since Canadian Idol, since he won that, so pretty cool. Kendra Kay, Bobby Wills, rock band FKB, Farewell Town, Weapons, Kea, One Bad Son is going to be here, and so many more. Well, that's it for me, your host, Kim Sear. Thank you so much for tuning into Music's Journey. Have yourselves a wonderful evening.
This old house, it's covered in dust. This old house has seen better days. This old car has turned from red into rust. And this old car dreams of the old highway. It still twists and turns. This old river used to run untamed. And this old town, well, its heart still burns. And this old town, which still runs through my veins. It's been a beautiful life. Oh, I've been along for one hell of a ride. Even though I may be falling apart, oh, it's been a beautiful life. Well, these old shoes, they've walked for miles and miles. And these old shoes, they've walked through life unafraid. This old guitar, got it when I was a child. This old guitar, well, it still has something to say. It's been a beautiful life. Oh, I've been along for one hell of a ride. Even though I may be falling apart, oh, it's been a beautiful life. Seen laughter and tears, and these eyes, they still see something new. And this old heart, it's still got a few more years. And this old heart.